Hello, I'm Chris Marland, and you're listening to Picture Book Podcast. My guest this week is author and illustrator Callan Till, who will be talking about his book, Do You Think Molly's Unique? So, when I first met Callan, I asked him to describe his book, Do You Think Molly's Unique? He described it as a conversation between Molly the Dachshund and humans. When the humans become overly critical of Molly's looks and behaviour, Molly decides that she has had enough and stands up for herself, demonstrating how unique she is. This story sends a message that everybody is unique, and it is that uniqueness that makes them. And I'm pleased to say that I am now joined by the author and illustrator, Callan. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
So what inspired you to become an author?
In 2022, my son, who was 15 at the time, found the original version of Do You Think Molly is Unique, which at the time was just called Molly.
Yes.
My son's very critical. He's a very analytical thinker. He's very hypercritical of a lot of the things that people do. And he said to me, hey, you know that book you wrote? I found it. I read it again. I like it. Why did you never publish it? And I said, wait, you like the book? You're 15. That's odd to me. That's a part of my life that I abandoned and to pursue a life of, you know, support for the family. It's like, now's the perfect time to get back into it. So that's the short version that got me back into writing. The long version takes us back to 2004. My nephew was an infant, so I was reading him the board books, the picture books like Goodnight Moon and a lot of Sandra Boynton books. And then my six-year-old, we were getting into Percy Jackson, styles like that. As I'm reading these books, I could visualize in my head the stories that were occurring in the books themselves. And I was like, this is fantastic. I really want to try to do this going forward as a means to an end, to be able to get my stories out and get them out to others in a format that is digestible at that point. Reading to them was really the spark for me to go into an English degree. And I realized the weakest link in anything that I could do was writing, English, grammar. Like, those were weak points for me growing up. And so I delved deep into different aspects of the English language, writing methodologies, everything from academic writing to creative writing. I found out very quickly that academic writing was not for me. I still struggle to this day with that. But creative writing, I really excelled at because, again, it gave me a chance to document, in a way, what was visually going on in my head. Molly came about because in 2006, for a children's literature class, our final project was to write a book. It could either be a young adult book or it could be a children's picture book. I chose children's picture book because I'm a visual person and I am fascinated with the idea of combining images with words. I love the idea that somebody could pick up a book that has images that could either complement what's being said on the page or be contradictory to what's being said on the page or enhance, you know, include an additional narrative that's not even being said throughout the narrative of the actual words in the book. And so I wrote Molly for the class. And when I got done, there was a sense of accomplishment that I had never actually felt that way before. As a result, that really is what put me over the edge and wanted me to, that had me pursue the idea of becoming an author. That's really my origin story.
That's quite a fascinating origin story there. Like the whole process, the fact that it's like been like 20 years in the making, going back to 2004. Yeah. And I completely agree when you were saying about, you know, you're going back to do some studying with English. Obviously, we've learned the language. We've been to school to help us with our writing skills, but writing a book is completely different skill, isn't it? So it's really remarkable to hear that you put in all that effort into studying it to really get a good grasp about creative writing. That's fantastic. While you were
adapting it? Because I know you said that your teenage son read it, but when you went back to it, did you often get opinions from children or other people?
Well, I did. So my son, my 15-year-old, he read the original version, which, to give you some context, the version that you see now is, of course, almost, I want to say, 80 to 85% different from what the original was. The original had no colorful background. It was just white. And then the dog was in the images. It still had the word bubbles. It was much shorter. It was actually only 15. I want to say it was 15 pages. In 22, I had a 13-year-old and then I had a 9-year-old. And I took it to them and then got their feedback. And then I actually had them take it to school and have their friends read it. And everybody liked the poem. They always thought it was a poem because it's in rhyme, right? I got their feedback from it. Some of the way the wording was used when I was rewriting the book, I was looking at it from the mindset of Molly as a 5-year-old. And that was purposeful because the theory goes is that dogs get an intelligence level of a 5 or 6-year-old. I tried to go back to the mindset of, well, how would a 5 or 6-year-old speak? And so I was trying to work that into the dialogue of the book because I wanted Molly to read as if they were the character's child in many ways. Because in where I live, there's a very much a mindset now that dogs are people's children. So I wanted to try to play off of that, really, is where I was trying to go with that whole idea, the whole concept. And so through the story, I tried to incorporate a lot of that in. And what I found is that people got confused. Like, why is Molly speaking in such a weird Yoda-like way? Because I was flipping certain words around so to make it rhyme, really, and still keep it with that. So I kind of had to abandon that and work back to what I was originally going with, was just get the flow. Cause I really wanted to have the flow through it. Cause one of my influences growing up were books like Cat in the Hat and Sneetches and those rhyme based books where it's not just about the rhyming. It's also about the beat in the story, in the words, the consonants and the syllables and how they create a rhythm, an actual rhythm as you read. So I got their feedback on that. I kind of put it together and then I took it to Alyssa, who is my spouse. I call her an unknown editor because she has the skills of an editor. She's done editing work before. And so it's kind of like I have a hidden gold mine in my house because she was able to help point out how to keep the rhythm going just by using a different word phrase in those certain sections. And that's how I really was able to refine the narrative. So then once I got the narrative done, then I just put it back into the book, the original version of the book. And I realized, okay, this is working. I need to add more pages. I need to add more illustrations. From there, it just grew to where I got the full book done, but still the white pages were in the background. I was like, this is really boring now for me. I really want something more colorful. So I stuck the background in, which is, the background of the house, the room that they're in. But I wanted to keep it very simple. The focus of the book shouldn't be on the background per se. It's about Molly and about the conversation she is having with the characters in the book.
On each page, obviously, Molly's the central focus. And I noticed that you really were able to illustrate the different expressions, the different emotions that Molly was feeling. It's quite challenging to do that as well. When you got something like an animal, you have to think about, how you can use the whole of the body to show that expression. So how did you go about that, to making sure that you could capture how Molly was feeling on each page?
I went back and looked at old animation, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Alice in Wonderland, where they had these overreactive facial expressions. Genie from Aladdin is another one. It's a great one. I went back and looked at image stills and look at those character expressions and stuff. And then I tried to apply not necessarily the same facial expression, but what I could take away, which is there's a lot of going on in eyebrows and the lines in mouth area, not the mouth necessarily, but actual like creases in the mouth and the eyebrows and how the eyebrows can accentuate anything. That's why in my book, if you really look at the book, the eyes of Molly are relatively the same throughout the entire book. And I do a lot of it with the color and the stretching of the face or the eyebrows themselves or in the mouth area, a lot more of lines that would normally not be on a dog in a book. I found that worked the best for Molly in many ways. Same with Sophie, the cat that does appear in the background. I did a lot of that same type of characterization for her. That's how I got to those expressions.
So, Callan, can you tell us the process of illustrating Molly?
So, back in 2004, I was not a very good illustrator. And when I tried to draw Molly from just visual, where I looked at Molly and I tried to draw her, it came out horrible. Like, it just looked, it didn't look real. And I wanted something that looked more authentic to who Molly really was. So what I did, and this is back when my funds were low, so this is very lo-fi, low-tech, but the reason why I want to tell the story is because I think if anyone is struggling with illustration and they want to get into writing and they want to make illustrated books for children, this is a pathway. I truly believe in it, and I still use it to this day, where I covered my couch and my floor with white blankets and white sheets. I took every lamp in the house that I could find and just lit the room up. And then I stuck Molly in the room. And I propped an old digital Canon camera on books and just started taking photos of Molly. I started to interact with Molly, tried to get her to do different poses and everything. I took all those images, which were extremely blurry for today's technology. I loaded them up into my computer and I used a really old version of Photoshop. I removed the background, so it was just the image of Molly, and I did a high contrast of color so I could really see lines. I was trying to get so I could see the differences in the color changes. And I printed those out, took tracing paper, put the tracing paper on top of the pictures, traced the images of Molly. This is without the expression. This is just Molly itself. Then I colored that using a felt black tip marker, scanned those back into my computer, took those into a very old version of Illustrator, and then I colored. I did all my coloring in the computer. And then from there, I have like 50, 60 different poses of Molly. That some of them aren't even used in the book. But what you find in the book, those are the actual images I used in that process. What I think is really important for people to get is that if you struggle with drawing, if you struggle with painting, you struggle with these things, but you want to create something for others, find ways to do it. Find any way you want. If you want to create a story where it's very action-based and you have these characters doing the thing, find your kids' action figures. Find action figures and take pose, you know, set them up in a diorama and take pictures of it. And then take that, scan it into the computer, and then manipulate it from there. Like, I'm a big proponent of use every tool in your toolbox. Use any means necessary. Use your kids' toys to write your story. That's the beauty of digital technology that we have today. You have the capability of capturing anything digitally and then manipulating it digitally. Choose what you got. And don't think, oh, I can't draw as a roadblock, because I did for a long time. For a long time before 2004, I steered away from drawing because I was horrible at it. At least I thought it was. And, you know, once I came up with the realization of, no, I can do it this way and achieve the same result or a better result.
And I just want to talk as well about the way you have like the speech bubbles, because I think that's very effective with how Molly's feeling as well. Because there's a lot of pages where like, there's like four speech bubbles, and it's like showing how overwhelming it is for her. So I thought that was really effective.
Thanks. Yeah. So the book itself is unique, right? It's not a typical children's book. It's a conversation. Mm. I purposely made the speech bubbles without characters. So it's the people who are reading the book. They are the characters in the book. Instantly, from the first page all the way through, you're interacting with Molly. You are the participant. And there's certain pages where I strategically did that, where I just started to pile those word bubbles on top of Molly, because I wanted to show Molly feeling overwhelmed, being just pushed down by the pressure of what is being said to her. Because then when she flips, it's like, nope, I'm not dealing with this anymore. This is not okay. I'm going to stand up for myself, right? It then has a greater impact going back up that way when she, spoiler alert, starts to talk. The book itself, the purpose of the book is to, hopefully what kids will take away from it is that everyone is unique. Everyone has a right to be unique, and you should be proud of those things that others consider maybe are flaws. They're not really flaws. They're just part of your characteristics, either visually or character-wise. And you should be proud of those things. You shouldn't try to change for others. And you have the right to speak up for yourself. You have the power to speak up for yourself. Don't let others take that away from you, is really the message of the book. That whole message idea stems from a lot of my childhood and the way that I was brought up, the individuals I interacted with. It was a different time back then. Things were different. Behaviors were different. But that doesn't mean I had to like it. And I didn't. And sometimes I wasn't treated the best way because I was the tallest kid in the class. I was the bulkiest kid in the class because I had a growth spurt before everybody else. You know, so I was the weird one. It was hard. It was a hard time for me. That's what really stemmed the story. So this is how I write. When I get a theme in my head, it's usually an unconscious thought in a way. It's involuntary, I guess is the best way to put it. It's like I didn't intentionally mean to write Molly the way I wrote it. It just came out that way because that's what decided to flow out of my brain at that time, because it wanted to deal with whatever, you know, issues I guess I had regarding that. And it helps. It helped me, but it also, I noticed that because it was so authentic, it was all truthful. Like when Molly stands up for herself and she got angry and she speaks back at them. And then not only that, but then she becomes skeptical of them and their willingness to change, or she shows them, you know, this is what I'd be like if I wasn't who I was. That all is authentic because I did something similar to that. And I've seen my children do that to others because we've always taught we've always preached in our house, you stand up for yourself. You have a right to be who you are. You know, don't change because people don't understand you. People are afraid of things they don't understand. Be open to that communication with them so you can find that connection. You know, so they can help find that connection and you can help them find it with you so they understand you better. That's how I came about with that book, is that it was an unconscious thread that is rooted from something in my childhood that became the actual conversation piece. Now, the conversation itself, the whole premise of a conversation, came from the influence of books like Stinky Cheese Man and Fairly Stupid Tales, I believe it's called. If I screwed up the name, I apologize. But it's by John Cizka and Lane Smith. I mean, they break the fourth wall in that book. And I love that idea of breaking the fourth wall and bringing the reader into the story. Because we're usually just passive participants when we're reading books, but to actually bring them in, be able to successfully bring somebody into the book as a character, whether they know it or not, that's impactful to me. I like that a lot. That's something I'm going to continue to try to do throughout any book I write going forward.
I've got a class that I teach, and I'll be definitely be reading this book some next week. So I think a lot of them would benefit from this.
Oh, awesome. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's what's keeping me going too as a writer, is the idea that I will have the opportunity to have a positive impact on children. Because I believe one of the questions I get is why children's books, why picture books? Why not young adult or even adult books? Well, because children are the foundation of our future. That's very cliche, but it's very true. And if I can have the ability to have a positive impact on children, that is enough to drive me forward in what I'm doing.
You talked a little bit about before about rhyming, but when you actually rhyming in the first place, did you find that quite a frustrating process? Like,
so for me, and this is going to probably irritate a lot of people that listen to or watch your podcast, but no, it's actually quite easy for me to do that. But the reason for that is growing up, I was first into musical composition and lyrical writing. So I kind of built that foundation of rhythm and rhyme from writing songs and music composition. So the whole idea of rhythm-based lyrics built from syllables, using the words, the syllables within words and consonants and then similar vowels at the end, you know, the rhyming vowels at the end of the words. That all was built from music. And taking that, then the transition from that into narrative-based lyric writing was just a natural progression for me to get where I went. What I will say is hard is finding the first two lines. So what I mean by that is I have quite a few books in the hopper that I'm working through. And they're all rhythm-based, or they're all rhyme-based books. And it's always finding the first two lines of that narrative, that rhyme, that give me the hardest time. I'll have a theme and I'll have a story, or I'll have a story in mind, and it just percolates in my head until I can get the first two lines out. Once I get the first two lines out, I'm usually able to just build off of that. And the way I do it is it's almost iterative in its approach, in that I will say the first two lines and then I write the next two lines that come out of without thought. And then I'll read that again and I'll just keep building and building and iterating through. And I will modify as I go till I get about 80 to 85% of it done. And then that's the core. And then from there, then I can basically turn off that part of my brain and go to the other side, which is more of a analytical, where I actually take it apart and make sure that my story or my theme that I'm trying to say is there. And then working through the rest of it mechanically, really, is how I do it. But that's the other reason why I like children's books so much, is that you have to say more with less words. And I think there's a greater challenge and a greater appeal there. Like, if you can pull off a book that is only at the most 800 words, but you're getting your message across in a profound way, that's impressive to me.
At the back of your book, there's a QR code that children can scan. Will you tell us what that QR code will lead us to, please?
Yeah, so the QR code, there's also the website there too that you can go to. So where that's supposed to take you to is a bonus page online that will show a video version of the book. So it's the book with audio and music composition over the book, and you can just watch through the book itself. I'm working on a read-along version of it. That's just taking longer to do. In fact, we still even have the video version, like the actual video version, done yet. I'm trying to get that done by the end of April. But that, along with other, there's going to be other components, like there'll be coloring pages, and then there'll be, I'm trying to work through some either like dad jokes or family trivia stuff that you could read like in the car. If I can come up with dog themed or cat themed jokes or trivia and put that on this bonus page, that would give parents an option where they're like, well, let me find something. Oh, here we go. And they can do it in the car or they can do it in line. That is something that I wanted to try to put together for people who bought the book as a thank you. I'm a big believer in, if you're going to invest in my product, I want to give you a way to receive extra stuff as a thank you.
I can imagine a lot of parents want to purchase a book with these extra activities as well. That's great. I just want to ask you now, have you got any other books lined up?
I do. In the hopper at this time, I actually have two more books. The first one is a completely, what I call a silent book. So it's just images telling the narrative. And then the second one is a thriller picture book. It's the theme is, how does one overcome your fear? I've always been influenced by Edgar Allan Poe. I love his work. I actually hate horror films. I don't like horror films. I don't like to be scared. That's not something I like. But it also means that it's something that I like to address with myself because it's something to overcome. It's the next thing to help push me forward. And I know I'm not the only one out there that feels that way. And I felt that way of the dark, of weird noises at night, of weird images, shadows, right? That all those things as a kid scared the tar out of me. I know there's other kids out there that are like that. So I want to write a book that pulls them in, has them see their fear, and then helps them overcome that. So that's what that book is. My plan is to have that book out by fall of 25. And the silent book, I'd like to get it out by spring of 25. That might be a spring of 26.
Right. I just want to say very quickly, though, I really admire the idea of having a picture book with no words at all, because I feel like we don't have enough of those. And I think they are so beneficial, because at the school I work at, we talk a lot about fluency and how we can help children with their fluency from an earlier age. And we talk about giving them more opportunities for them to talk about the story, not necessarily just reading the words, but talk about the story and try to like tell the story by just observing the illustrations. So I think it's great that you're releasing a book that's just completely pictures and no words.
Do you know who David Wiesner is? W-I-E-S-N-E-R?
Yes, I've heard of him, yes.
He's a huge influence on my writing career, or on my, I guess, my illustrative portion of my writing career. Tuesday, I think, is the one he's most famous for. There's the only words that are in that book are timestamps for when events occur in the book. But he writes in that way, where most of his books are nothing but image-based narration. And I find that fascinating. That, to me, is so engaging. If I had to recommend anyone, any author to introduce a child to, it's that. It's his work, for sure. Because it just gets your brain going. It gets your imagination flowing. It gets your creativity going. It's awesome.
Just want to ask as well, where can people find you to find out your upcoming book and also about Do You Think Molly's Unique?
Sure. So I have a website. It's CallenTill, CallenTill, .net. You can also find me at CallenTillPublishing.com. And then on social media, right now, all I have is a Facebook and Instagram account. It's under CallenTill. For Facebook, my Facebook page is Callen_Till-author. I plan to get more out there into like TikTok and Instagram, things like that. It's just, that's a barrier for me. I'll be honest. I'm just not savvy enough yet, but I'm getting there. Mainly it's my website, and at callentill.net would be the primary place for sure. And that's where you can find my book as well. You can find it on, if you're looking for the actual book, you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's in both those places as well.
Callen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been great talking to you, and I wish you all the best of luck with your upcoming books.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Please reach out again anytime.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Picture Book Podcast. Please consider subscribing to the show and join me next week, where I'll be talking to author Jen Mott, illustrator Sarah Relojo, and formatter Emily Hunter Higgins, who will be talking about their book, Why Teaching?